You are listening to the Fans of Wrestling Show here on the FOW Radio Network. I am Patrick with Danny Danger and Mika Villas. We're back after a one-week break, where not only did we have a break, but so did my car. But amen, we all survived. Fellas, it's good to see you guys again this week. Lots of wrestling to talk about. How are you guys doing?
We are doing well. Yes, you know, we had the extra week off, but we are well on the road to WrestleMania. You know, lots of things to talk about heading into Fastlane. I mean, they announced, you know, a lot of things internationally as well, the New Japan Cup, and we got a bunch of different stuff to talk about that could be a lot of
fun. Pointing at the WrestleMania sign, so you know what that means, boys. It is on. I may not be the main event, but I am going to be here with you guys every step of the way as we go and talk about wrestling.
So let's go ahead and get started. And, of course, we didn't get a chance to talk about Elimination Chamber, so we're going to go ahead and take some time to first get that, you know, out of the way here, because a lot of things have happened since then that really are on the road to WrestleMania are getting things heat up. So, in the pre-show, Buddy Murphy defeated Akira Tozawa to retain the WWE Cruiserweight Championship. Then, in the main card, in no particular order, Baron Corbin defeated Braun Strowman in a no disqualification match, thanks to interference from Drew McIntyre and Bobby Lashley. The Bus and Hug Connection won the Tag Team Elimination Chamber to become the inaugural Women's Tag Team Champions. The Usos defeated Miz and Shane McMahon to win the WWE SmackDown Tag Team Championships. Finn Balor defeated Bobby Lashley and Leo Rush to win the Intercontinental Championship. Ronda Rousey defeated Ruby Riott in a very short match to retain the Raw Women's Championship. And Daniel Bryan defeated AJ Styles, Jeff Hardy, Kofi Kingston, Randy Orton, Samoa Joe to retain the WWE Championship. So let's go ahead and get started with first the women. Of course, Sasha and Bayley winning the championships to the surprise of no one, I don't think. They were the heavy favorites. And Ronda Rousey makes quick work of Ruby Riott, but of course, the follow-up, of course, it was the man and the baddest woman in the planet going at it, and basically that being the main focus out of this match. So your thoughts here on the women on the Elimination Chamber?
Well, first off, you know, I mean, the Elimination Chamber match was really, I think it was really well done. I mean, I felt like some of the things as far as, I mean, some of the story to me was fairly predictable. I knew that Nia and Tamina weren't going to come in first right away. I knew that I literally in my head said, okay, so they're going to bring, as soon as they come in, I said, okay, they got a couple teams to eliminate and then people are going to team up and eliminate them. And that's exactly what happened. They eliminated two teams, and then people joined up to take them out. And, you know, of course, you know, the Boston Hug Connection win, give everybody the feel-good moment, you know, as the baby faces who've worked oh so hard to help the women's revolution and evolution and set up these titles win. I was disappointed. Like, I understood that the Ronda Rousey's match with Ruby Riott was essentially to build Ronda as a strong champion heading towards WrestleMania. I expected some kind of shenanigans with Becky, but I was disappointed that we didn't actually really get a match, that it was Ruby Riott stalling and then Ronda basically, you know, slammed her and snapped the armbar in. I get it. It's meant to show her she's pissed off. She's dominant. But at the same time, I felt that Ruby could have really had a really, you know, could have had a good match with her and a good, strong showing against a credible challenger, I think, does just as much as a dominant win and, you know, I mean, this is Ruby Riott's highest profile match to date, and they literally job her out with no real chance for redemption because you know that it wasn't going to build into a longer term storyline. So a little upset that we didn't get to see more of Ruby Riott on a bigger stage. Not her time, I guess. Not the right place, I guess. But, you know, I mean, it was... I also found it odd that after all the beatdowns and everybody was, you know, hurting and going to the back after the confrontation with Rhonda and Becky and Charlotte, they just played the music for the next match. You know, Baron Corbin, like they're literally showing people are still in the ring trying to help Rhonda get out, and Baron Corbin's music starts playing. Like, I was like, is that like their, okay, get the hell out of the ring now. We need to go on to the next match kind of thing. Like, it just seemed odd. There's odd little things like that I've been noticing more on WWE TV where they do that, or somebody has an entrance and then, okay, now we're going to go to commercial, and then we come back from commercial, and then we show the video package about the superstars going to the Dr. Martin Luther King Memorial. And then we show a thing about, here's what you can expect on SmackDown or whatever. And then this whole time, like, one of the competitors is in the ring playing the music. It's just odd timing. And I guess it's to get you to keep watching and not fast forward through segments or whatever by intermingling things. But it seems really odd. But, you know, I mean, the big story yet again, hyping Becky Lynch and Ronda Rousey. Hopefully we don't get the triple threat, because I think the triple threat's going to hurt more than it's going to do good. The fight that everybody wants to see is Ronda and Becky one-on-one, not a triple threat. Charlotte doesn't do good in triple threats anyways. She gets really sloppy and gets kind of lost at times. And so I think the money match is what the money match needs to be. They just need to focus on that. Still early in the story, though, to see where all it goes. Interested, you know, with the Boston Hug Connect take the belts to looking for challengers, which is also an interesting thing. So I felt the women's segments were good. They used them well. Ups and downs, of course, but I felt that the people they wanted to have time to shine did. Except, of course, Ruby Riott, which they obviously didn't really seem to want to shine.
They did Ruby wrong. They really did. And I'm in totally complete agreement with you. They did her wrong two nights in a row. Not only was it a quick, fast match on the pay-per-view, but the next night on Raw, it was rinse and repeat. So we know she's a credible competitor. She is, I believe, seasoned enough that she could help Ronda's cause to help her look more credible in the ring. That's just something that I don't think, seem vested in, giving a lot of time with people who she maybe has not practiced with a lot. But the Raw Women's Championship match for the pay-per-view and the next night after was forgettable at best. I like the Elimination Chamber match. I felt that, once again, the history or her story that the WWE was creating, yes, of their own accord, that this is the first women's tag team champions, if you believe that. It's the first
WWE women's tag team champions, what they've always said. They never said first ever tag team champions held by women, period. They just keep saying the first WWE women's tag team champions. And it's the first ones under the WWE, you know, so they can, if you add enough adjectives, yeah, you can be the first. You can call yourself the first. We're the first ones to do this on this date, in this time, at this place, and the first ever. Well, I mean, you added enough modifiers that it's difficult to debate.
We can debate it, but I love the dynamic of it all. It was, I don't want to say funny, but it was a little telling that the team of Carmella and Naomi were the first ones out. The controversy surrounding personal lives between Carmella and Corey Graves. I think maybe helped to solidify that, along with the fact that Naomi's husband and her were pulled over. He subsequently arrested for, I don't know, being Black, who knows. But that was interesting for me. But yeah, the whole moral of the story is the title's going to two of the women who the WWE is firmly behind in Bayley and Sasha Banks. I think it opens up a lot of opportunities for other women because these titles are subsequently going to be defended on every brand in the WWE. They're not just Raw exclusive. They're not just SmackDown exclusive. They can also go to NXT. We may see them over in the UK. I guess it gives a lot of combinations, scenarios where these ladies can go out with these titles and bring in to the WWE's main focus other female competitors who the majority of the WWE universe may not be familiar with. A lot of people don't watch NXT. They don't watch the other brands or the other spinoff brands. So they'll get introduced via Sasha and Bayley competing to your Kairi Sane, to your Io Shirai's. And that will help expand the women's evolution in the WWE. So one champion was kind of, these new champions, I look forward to what's on the horizon and what they bring to the table and these title belts.
See, with WWE, though, in their universe, they can tell whatever story they want to tell. They can write their own stories and say whatever they want to say, because at the end of the day, it's their universe, and anything outside of it, if it doesn't fit their stories, their narrative, then it doesn't matter. As far as the women's match with Rousey and Riot, maybe not what people were expecting, but at least, you know, people are paying attention to Ruby Riot more and more. Being next to Ronda, people are going to pay attention. May not yet be her time. Her time will eventually come. But being put in a situation here, even though many thought she was just an afterthought, I thought that at least being there definitely helped. But definitely things with Rousey and with Becky continue to get more intense. And, as we've seen, they want to fight each other, then Vince McMahon comes out and then takes out Becky from the match, adds Charlotte. And as we saw on Raw this past week now, with Becky Lynch getting arrested, is crazy. And Ronda, this promo and leaving the belt in the ring, who knows what all of that means. And then they going at it on the Twitter machine. It's just only fueling this feud more and more. People want to see these two women go at it at WrestleMania. It's great. And yeah, I think you couldn't have picked a better tag team to win this right now. You got to do something with Bayley and Sasha, and this was the perfect thing, especially if you're going to keep them out of the title picture, which can be a good thing. They need some time away from that. They can take the championships, the tag titles, to all the other different brands, and they will draw, and I think it'll be great. There's a lot of women that can also benefit from that. So I thought that the matches were, especially as far as the chamber match was great. The girls definitely, for the most part, killed it. There were some parts there. Then they weren't necessarily the best, like Mandy Rose and Sonya Deville. But other than that, the rest of the tag teams did their thing, and it was very fun. I think it was the second longest match tonight, 33 minutes. And, of course, the Boston Hawk Connection, new champions. Baron Corbin beating Strowman here with the help of his comrades. Looks like a new faction is brewing with Lashley, McIntyre, and Corbin, which is kind of interesting, but I don't really care about Corbin, so it's whatever. Now, as we saw last Monday night, maybe including one Elias, who seems to have been turned as a heel now. But let's talk about the two title matches that did change hands. The Usos winning the tag championships and Finn Balor also winning the Intercontinental Championship.
We had talked kind of about would Balor not win, you know, and they play the story well. You know, he dispatched of Bobby and attacked Leo, you know, but it also led to a little bit of dissension between the two of them as Leo kept trying to tag himself in and pissing Lashley off about that. Interesting in that respect. I'm curious to see what they do now with Balor that he has the Intercontinental belt. Is he going to continue to feud with Lashley, you know, heading into WrestleMania? Does he pick up a new challenger somewhere along the way? Yeah, interesting to see where that goes. The Usos, you know, winning. I mean, they are WWE's tag team division and have been for many, many years. They're one of the very, very few constants. So it's wasn't really too much of a surprise for them to win. You know, they're because they've been there so long, they're always seen as a credible champion and a very possible real threat to take the championships. And starting to see, you know, I mean, I think Patrick, it was you who first brought up that that we would probably get Shane versus Miz at WrestleMania. So this them losing the belts is probably the first step. Then I'm guessing they lose the rematch, and you know, then erupts into a brawl or miscommunication or something that starts it and eventually kind of turns it to where they will be feuding against each other come Mania. But I mean, the match was interesting for what it's worth. It told a good story, which is the important thing. And we'll see where the story continues to go. Who gets stuck in the Uso penitentiary, you know, fighting them 100 times for the next couple months. That remains to be seen.
I was shocked that the Usos take this victory. With the aforementioned arrest, I thought that was a no-go, that they had squandered their opportunity, so to speak, to pick up the main tag team gold for the Blue Brand, even though they've been to the top of the mountain several times, and they are indeed a legitimate tag team down since day one. I'm kind of bored with them. I don't see any real competition. The Miz and Shane gave like comic relief with a bit of athleticism and what have you, but there's nobody that I see seriously challenging the Usos that we haven't already seen before. They've been through the Bar. They've been through the New Day. They've been through the Ascension. They've been through everybody. Tag team wrestling in the WWE, at least from the male perspective, is being recycled and rehashed. I almost feel that the Usos are transitional champions until they figure out what exactly it is that they want to do with those SmackDown championships. There isn't such thing as too many titles, and the dual tag team titles might be in need of a unification where Raw and SmackDown tag teams come together and the champions fight it out for one belt, kind of like, you know, Lord of the Rings. There can be only one or whatever. I don't know. But, yeah. Usos having a title. I'm not impressed. I'm surprised, but not impressed at all.
I'm not even going to begin to chastise you for your fantasy sci-fi misquotings there. We're just going to hope that one of our listeners lets you have it on the Twitter machine.
What did I say wrong?
I told you I'm not even gonna go into it. It's okay. Disappointing. It's disappointing, okay? It's like when your parents, it was so much worse, you wanted them to be mad at you and they would just be like, I'm not mad, just disappointed, and like that was so much, that was like so, that cut so much deeper. That's what it is.
Yeah, okay. Well, oh my gosh. Well, I apologize for anybody who's disappointed. Anybody who wants to come at me and tell me something more or tell me where I'm wrong, by all means, step up. Step up. I ain't a Uso. I ain't scared of you. Ain't no penitentiary. We can go, Glenda. Whatever.
Finn Balor, I thought that he was going to lose, you know, an easy way with the handicap match.
I think at this point, we should know that if it's a handicap match, the guy who's handicapped is going to win. Like, at this point, it happens. It seems to happen more times than not that if it's a 2-on-1 or a 3-on-1 situation, the one wins.
You're right. And I should have known better, but for some reason, I didn't think so. But now, seeing what we've seen with Lashley and the animosity with Leo makes all the sense in the world why they did it. I mean, I like it. Finn Balor can do a lot of good things with the Intercontinental Championship. And I think that that's going to be fun. We'll see a lot of great matches. You know, the IC title can sometimes be the workhorse title. So that will be fun to see some really good matches in the undercard for Balor with a lot of different contenders. And yeah, I definitely thought the Usos win here would begin the animosity between the greatest tag team in the world, or whatever it is they call themselves. And we did see some animosity, and they're going to get the rematch, which Shane reluctantly agreed to make. And I definitely do think they're going to lose again. They're going to continue to blame each other. And a WrestleMania match is what we're going to get between the Shane and Miz.
Who do you think becomes the heel in that situation? Who do you think breaks up the team? Do you think Miz becomes heel even after he's talked about having his kid and all this and his dad and all this stuff? Do you think he goes heel and they make the babyface Shane? Or do you think Shane gets pissed and says, oh, I never should have listened and trusted you and I made a lapse in judgment, and Shane becomes the heel? How do you think this story plays out?
I mean, the way it's looking, I'm feeling like Shane could be the heel, especially with now with all the McMahons, the way they're fluctuating within the brand. He could go any way right now. And I think that Shane as the heel would, you know, do some good. And with, of course, Miz as the babyface with his the second season of his show, Miz and Mrs. coming out around WrestleMania season. Yeah, you want him to be as big of a babyface so people can watch his show. So yeah. That's not a coincidence at all.
I agree. Totally Miz for the heel. Excuse me, for the face. And the McMahons. McMahons by nature, especially in the WWE world, they are always the bad guy. They are the bosses. They are the overseers, the oppressors of the talent who's trying to rise up and become the best in the world at what they do. So it would be simple for Shane to push that button, so to speak, and to flip into, you know, Vince Jr. mode, where he just kind of, Vince Jr. mode, where he just becomes his dad and just tells Miz he was never any good in the first place. And, you know, whatever he's going to say, whatever promo he cuts, and, you know, maybe fires Maryse, because, you know, why not fire the pregnant lady? That's a big old heel move. But Shane definitely for the heel in this case, where Miz comes out a huge baby face. Which helps ratings and helps further the Miz, you know, as he continues his WWE career. He may not main event WrestleMania anytime soon, but he's still one of the upper echelon talents today in WWE.
And finally, the new Daniel Bryan retains the WWE Championship. Fantastic match here with AJ, Jeff Hardy, Kofi Kingston, Randy Orton, Samoa Joe. But the biggest takeaway here, Kofi Kingston was the last man, remaining, challenging Daniel Bryan. And a lot of people impressed. I mean, the fact that coming out of this, Twitter was going crazy for Kofi Mania, and they wanted to see him get the shot at Fastlane. Of course, now we're going to talk about that in a moment. But your thoughts, not only the Elimination Chamber match in general, but Kofi's performance.
We all know the performances Kofi is capable of. you know, he's always done amazing things athletically, you know, from Money in the Banks to Chambers in the past. Like, he's always done great, exciting things. But he's finally, he's getting that opportunity to show that he can be more than just kind of a stunt guy, the guy who does the cool moves periodically. I was surprised that Samoa Joe was the first eliminated very quickly. You know, it makes sense to do that, as that's kind of been Joe's downfall. It's, he's a monster destroyer, but throughout his career, he's fallen victim to quick pinning combinations. It's just, it's been a recurring theme, and I think it works for him because he doesn't really lose a lot of momentum by losing in that kind of fashion, as opposed to if he got dominated and destroyed by somebody else. But I mean, they, the gimmick that Samoa Joe's carried his entire career was how, you know, is how he lost any matches in TNA, he lost it, you know, in Ring of Honor, while he was loose in tags and in multi-mans where the belt was not aligned, very quickly to, you know, pinfalls and stuff. So it carried a bigger story, but at the same time, I was surprised he was the first one to go. But Kofi did well, and I think they showed, they gave a lot. He just was the last guy in. It's once it came down to he and Daniel, there was a lot of time there. Kofi kicking, you know, escaping the label lock at one point in time, kicking out after taking the running knee, and then continuing to do, you know, big and exciting things before eventually succumbing and losing. But and then, you know, outstanding performance. Everybody looked great in the match. Daniel Bryan, of course, you know, continues to have his words in his way. But yeah, the internet exploded. The people exploded. They want to see more Kofi. They want to see Kofi get a one-on-one match at WrestleMania, which is what the Kofi Mania is not is supposed to. It's supposed to be Kofi at WrestleMania, not like Hulkamania, Kofi Mania kind of thing. But when they talk about it on WWE TV, they seem to make it seem like it's Kofi Mania, like Hulkamania, not Kofi as in Kofi at WrestleMania. But we'll see. You know, they set it up and try to give him a rematch at Fastlane. Things changed. Maybe it's just another part of the story. Maybe he does get title shots. You know, they like playing, making the ups and downs and making people mad. I think that's part of it, to make you mad that when they do give you what you want, you're that much more excited about it.
WWE is definitely making people mad. Kofi put in, I want to almost call it the match of a lifetime with this Elimination Chamber match. It was, again, you know, you had all these participants and it had to get down to he and the new Daniel Bryan. And when those two kind of got in there alone, the internet and I think the entire wrestling universe kind of exploded. I was on the edge of my seat. I cheered. I was biting nails. It was very, very well done, this match. Kofi is a talent, and I think his talent was showcased in this match. And for those who were not aware, it was a wake-up call for just how good he really is. He was given the opportunity. Daniel Bryan is a fantastic opponent. Bryan makes people look good. He helps to cultivate stars, and Kofi is definitely, definitely a star. The end goal of this whole thing should be a one-on-one match at WrestleMania for Kofi Kingston for the WWE Championship. That should be the end goal. Whether we'll get there or not, whether we'll get to the mountaintop, I do not know. But I know that there is a firm belief in Kofi and a huge contingency of people who want to see what Kofi can do in a situation where it is just him one-on-one fighting for the main championship and having a fighting chance for that title. The Elimination Chamber match was great. It was, again, a wake-up call to see him go out there and do his thing. And the emotional ride that we're on with Kofi is well thought out, I think, or at least thought out enough where they're pulling at your heartstrings, they're pulling at your happiness, your anger, your everything, and that makes compelling television. We are all invested in Kofi Kingston right now, and that the WWE loves. They may not have wanted this, but they're happy to have it.
So invested that the fans got exactly what they wanted. Daniel Bryan versus Kofi Kingston at Fastlane for the WWE Championship. And as we learned last Tuesday on SmackDown Live, Mr. McMahon once again changing things up, not believing Kofi was a big enough star. Then he announces his replacement, and it'll be Daniel Bryan versus the returning Kevin Owens at Fastlane for the WWE Championship. And we go from celebration to heartbreak for Kofi Kingston. May not necessarily be the end of this Kofi mania. There's still a lot of shows to go to, but, you know, kind of simulating what's happening with Becky and now doing it to Kofi on SmackDown Live, taking him out. Man, they played it perfectly. I mean, their hearts were broken, and my heart broke for them.
It was definitely a powerful thing, and yet again, sending the internet aflame. But, you know, I was talking with somebody else about when McMahon's came out and said, you know, hey, we're bringing back and things are going to be different and we're changing things up. They really suckered us in on that one, because now we once again have Vince McMahon going against what the fans want and doing what's best for business. We have Steph and Triple H back on TV every week. They even referred to them as the authority this past Monday. You know, Triple H looks to be like he will have another match at WrestleMania. So when they told us that things were going to be different, some of us started to believe and started to have hope. But I think they ultimately suckered us in with that one, and we only have ourselves to blame for not learning from history that things were really not going to change. It was going to just be more of a lot of the same old tropes. But I'm curious to see if that ends up making this a triple threat at WrestleMania, similar to how they're teasing that, you know, that seems to be the direction they're going to possibly go with the women. You know, do we get KO and Kofi and Daniel Bryan, or is this kind of a KO in and then he steps off to something else? I guess it remains to be seen. I was happy to see KO back. He looked great. He looked in good shape. You know, that he's been able to, even though he had the knee replacement, it's been, I mean, heck, he's been out, I think, I want to say 6-8 months maybe, since he had knee surgery on both knees. But he looked good. I look forward to seeing what he can do. But at the expense of Kofi was heartbreaking. Everybody did well in that segment, is Kofi being shocked and heartbroken and his friends being pissed off and mad for him. And talk about not just mad, but disappointed.
So now that we know that's going to happen, lots of other things happening in the WWE on the road to taking the fast lane to WrestleMania. And big things happening as things are getting changed up. And we got some call-ups from the NXT. NXT champion Tommaso Ciampa, NXT North American champion Johnny Gargano, Ricochet, and Aleister Black, all now part of the main roster, it seems, and they're floating around until they really figure out what to do with them. Is this going to be the new trend? Are we going to see people get called up and be put on the brands for a while until they find their place?
Well, I mean, the first one that they did like this half and half kind of call up with was with Kevin Owens. You know, he was still NXT champion, and he comes and starts the feud with John Cena for the United States Championship. You know, and he went back and forth, and he was defending the NXT belt, and then he ended up winning the fighting with Cena still. But then you had these, you know, I mean, heck, it was I can't remember how long it was, but it seems like it was well over a month ago that they announced the six NXT call-ups and said these people would be coming up soon. And then these people were essentially free agents until they were officially signed by either Raw or SmackDown. You know, those being Lars Sullivan, EC3, Lacey Evans, Nikki Cross, and Heavy Machinery. You know, we've seen those guys kind of, all of those kind of float back and forth. So they haven't really settled, but they haven't been back down to NXT since being called up. So I don't know, you know, with these four, they call up, but then, you know, as we saw on this week's NXT, all four of those guys are still heavily involved in storylines. You know, both teams, I mean, well, Ricochet and Aleister Black are going to be in the Dusty Rhodes Tag Team Classic, and DIY is back together and go into the Dusty Rhodes Tag Team Classic as well. So, you know, at least until WrestleMania, when those storylines get finished out, these guys are going to bounce back and forth. So I don't know if this is going to be the trend of bringing people up in chunks rather than one at a time with vignettes to kind of hype them and these kind of things. I think they're just trying out different methods. Some people may come up, you know, by themselves, get the whole vignettes and hype packages, some squash matches to start, you know, before they get a decent program. Others, they may just be kind of brought up in these groupings. It's interesting to see what they do with these, you know, as both of these teams have been dominant. They've defeated tag team champions and stuff, you know, defeated former tag team champions on television. Strange to see where they go. How much are they going to stay on TV full-time and stay on NXT full-time? Are they going to kind of, okay, we've had a few appearances on WWE, on, you know, SmackDown. Now we're going to be on, go back to NXT for a while and then come back after Mania. I don't know. Yeah, I really don't know.
I think they're trying out different methods, as you said, because, again, the WWE universe is very limited in their knowledge of independent wrestlers. There are, of course, wrestling Twitter and a large number of people who are WWE fans who know who these guys are outside of their WWE personas. But for the most part, when you go to these live shows, especially Monday Night Raw or SmackDown, the fans in attendance do not have a clue who some of your signed NXT talent, especially the ones who come from the indies, they have no clue who it is that they're looking at and what they're capable of. So this is a way to introduce a huge chunk of the guys and girls into the main portion of the universe and to give them some kind of purpose and story that the rest of the WWE fans can kind of latch onto. Take Lacey Evans, for instance. There is no reason for Lacey Evans to walk at all down the ramp or whatever it is that she's doing, sashaying. And every show for since this pay-per-view or whatever, she's just sashayed her little happy butt out there, back and forth. It gives the WWE universe a look at her. It gives commentary a chance to talk about whatever it is that she's doing or not doing and bringing up the no nasties, and people get somewhat intrigued to see what this blonde can do other than walk. The same goes for your Tommaso Ciampas, your Johnny Garganos, your Aleister Blacks, where you put them in the ring with people who the universe is familiar with, Cesaro and Sheamus or what have you, and you watch them beat tag team champions or former champions cleanly, and it gives them that credibility that the WWE universe is like, wow, these guys are really good. Even though, yeah, we know they're really good. It's just to kind of, again, introduce them to the masses and to perhaps formulate some story where maybe they break off, maybe they break up and they start fighting amongst each other. Do they need to go back to NXT? We've seen before stars do double duty in NXT. Paige came from NXT, an earlier version of NXT, but still she was doing double duty as the NXT. She had to relinquish the belt, but she was a women's champion at one point while she was up on the main roster. So it is a possibility for them to do that. But the WWE has so many brands out there in the universe right now. I think they're going a different way than a 205 Live experiment, where you brought up your Mustafa Ali or you had your Cedric or you had these cruiserweights that the crowd didn't necessarily take to the way they wanted, the WWE wanted the crowd to take to. So they're going a different route, a different introduction, so to speak, to try to get these guys, try to get them over, quite frankly. So we'll see if it works. Hopefully it does.
Yeah, we'll definitely see. It's going to be interesting to see how people get called up. I mean, we talked about it not long ago about the different call-ups and, you know, when would they call up meaningful names? Well, they called up four very meaningful names. Now it's going to see what happens. And, of course, now with word that Tommaso Ciampa has a neck injury, leaves a lot of things to question, of course. NXT tapings have gone through, so they're covered for a few weeks. So the champ can rest the neck and see where they go from there. Now, also WWE news, the Hall of Fame inductees are starting to come out, and two names already listed. First, D-Generation X, Shawn Michaels, Triple H, The New Age Outlaws, X-Pac, and China will be inducted into the Hall of Fame as the group. And the Honky Tonk Man, the self-proclaimed greatest Intercontinental Champion of all time, will also be inducted into the Hall of Fame. So your thoughts? Yeah, I think personally, DX, you know, it's Sean again, second time he'll get another ring. A good way to get Triple H in there without really putting him in there as a solo act, as he's not yet ready to call it quits. And also maybe a smart way for the elite to put in China without putting a big spotlight on her. And the Honky Tonk Man, well, he is the Honky Tonk Man, and he called himself the greatest Intercontinental Champion of all time. So why not put him there when you're in New York? The big lights, you got to get the biggest stars.
Yeah, I mean, we got big names already for the Hall. Still many more to announce. I mean, we've heard rumors of some, but you never know until they're actually placed there. I am interested to see that. We are getting China in there, and I think that's a good step in the right direction. Especially given that, a lot of the members of DX have had different things. All the stuff that China did, there were other people involved, some of which are, the big thing they talked about was her sex tape initially, X-Pac was in that. But he didn't really receive that kind of heat from it. She was the one who seemed to be, taking most of the heat, the brunt from that.
I thought you were going to say short end of the stick. I really did.
No, I've never really been a huge fan of DX, but I know what they were and what they meant for the Attitude Era. They were WWE's NWO, so they definitely deserve to be in the Hall of Fame, is that, those members carried so much of the WWE programming for so many years. And the Honky Tonk Man, like you mentioned, he still considers himself the greatest Intercontinental Champion of all time, even though he was beat in a matter of seconds by the Ultimate Warrior. Still considers himself the greatest of all time.
The fluke, brother. He's cool. He's country. He's bad. He's the Honky Tonk Man. He says he's the greatest. Who are we to deny his
I still thought it was funny. I guess I only caught kind of the tip part of the end of Honky Tonk Man, just because when I was watching, it wasn't watching. But there was the clip where he said, "People stop me on the road all the time and ask me to sign autographs and talk about it and ask me if I'm Elvis Presley, and I don't know who that is." That was a good one.
He's a Honky Tonk Man. He has no clue about his imitators. He's an original.
That's it.
It's Honky Tonk Man being in the Hall of Fame. That's one of those okay, that's fine. That's a nostalgia kind of nod. He was, I don't want to say an integral part, but he was a workhorse for his day. He was there. He showed up. He entertained. He did what, they needed to do. Jeff Jarrett may or may not have taken the guitar shots from the Honky Tonk Man and incorporated it into his repertoire. He's a cousin of, or some kind of relation to one, Jerry the King Lawler. So, whatever. I mean, we're not calling it nepotism, but we're saying that Honky Tonk Man, he has his place now in the Hall of Fame, and it is what it is. The big news is the fact that not just DX, but DX with China, is they're going to be in the Hall of Fame. That is, that's huge because of the quote-unquote controversy where after her death, Triple H was asked about China in the Hall of Fame, and at the time, he made some reference of, not right now, and I don't know if we ever could, you know, because of her outside activities as far as wrestling went. So it's nice to see them kind of turn the other cheek, so to speak, and not be hypocrites, because X-Pac, of course, has been open-armed, welcome back into the WWE on several occasions. He's had difficulties with substance abuse and what have you, and got help, but in her lifetime, China had some of those same problems, and unfortunately, seems like the help did not come or whatever. But neither here nor there, she was a huge part of that group, being that she was a female bodyguard, and that gave a lot of inspiration to other females who wanted or looked up to wrestling and wanted to be like somebody. You want to talk about an evolution. China's evolution in the WWE was magnificent. She went from, you know, kind of silent and this posing figure to this mamacita, to this badass, to this unstoppable force in the women's division in its infancy, so to speak, as literally and truly, she didn't have any real competition in the women's division. Intercontinental champion, doing programs with Chris Jericho, being a part of Eddie Guerrero. So just a whole lot that she contributed to the WWE, not just as a member of DX, but as a member, a viable member of the WWE roster and family back in the day. So it's good to see that they've come away from shying away from the name China, and it'll now be etched in the Hall of Fame books where it belongs.
Now, do you guys think that D-Generation X is the headliner?
I mean, they typically announce the headliner first, right? I mean, that's the gimmick. They give you the big name first, so I'm guessing it's DX. I mean, it's Triple H, it's Shawn Michaels. I would assume that they're not going to play second fiddle to anybody.
They're definitely the headliner. Yeah, Michaels and his diva attitude, even though, you know, he's changed or whatever, he doesn't play backup quarterback for anybody. Hunter in charge, he's not playing backup for anybody.
Yeah, I have to think that they will headline the show. And well, in an age where they're starting to run out of headliners, this is a perfect time to get them in until they eventually do induct The Rock, Undertaker, Triple H, John Cena.
Are you tired of the same old pro wrestling? Then check out the amazing action on Powerslam.tv, the biggest indie pro wrestling channel in the world. Get over 4,000 hours of the best pro wrestling events from over 110 of the biggest names in the industry from over 15 countries around the globe. Get your free trial today at Powerslam.tv.
All right, so let's leave the Elite for a minute before we shut down this episode and talk about the New Japan Cup, which has been announced. We do have the first round matches set. This time, 32 wrestlers instead of the usual 16. So it's going to be a little bit bigger. And you got quite a good mix of names here. So in the first round, one side you have you have Nagata versus Ishii, Honma versus Taichi, Nakanishi versus Yoshihashi, Juice Robinson versus Chase Owens, Okada versus Elgin, Mikey Nichols making his New Japan debut as a member of Chaos, of course, the former Nick Miller of the Mighty in NXT, versus Hikulo, Will Ospreay versus Bad Luck Fale, and Hinari versus Lance Archer. On the other side, Tanahashi versus Umino. Tenzan will be wrestling against an opponent to be determined, as Finley had to back out due to injury. Ibushi versus Naito. Evil versus Sabre Jr. Makabe versus Cabana. Yano versus Davey Boy Smith Jr. Kojima versus Suzuki. And Goto versus Sonata.
I mean, it's 32 guys. It's a huge field. They're doing it over, I think, 12 shows. But it is a big deal. It goes on to face Switchblade at the New Japan show at Madison Square Garden. So that will be an event for them, for New Japan, of course, in the United States, especially. So you have the big field, you know, a lot of people that you wouldn't think as being in there, you know. Nagata and Nakanishi are not guys who usually get the nods. They're veterans, they're older, they're helping out the young guys. But you also then have Shota Umino, still considered a young lion, still using the young lion's moveset. But here he's starting off the tournament against Tanahashi in the first round. I mean, other big matches. I mean, to me, Suzuki versus Kojima, that's one I love both guys. I love seeing Kojima in bigger roles. I do know that sadly he's kind of dwindling towards the twilight of his career as well. So towards the end, you know, the bigger opportunities for him. Colt Cabana apparently really, really impressed the crowd at the Honor Rising events this past weekend. It was given the nod into the New Japan Cup against Makabe. We'll see how he does there. I mean, in that first round match, Kota Ibushi versus Tetsuya Naito. I mean, to most people, that could be the finals, and it could be the barn burner and the show stealer, but it's first round, which means only one of those guys is going to move forward. Mikey Nichols, you know, of Chaos now, is interested to see what he can do on his own against Hikuleo, the other brother of the Gorillas of Destiny. He's near, you know, he's a really lean guy, but he looks to be closer to 7 feet tall. We'll see what he can do. I mean, yet again, it's just a stacked card, a very wild card, and interesting to see what kind of matchups we get as this thing goes on. I mean, of course, the two big front runners, you would have to say, would be Zack Sabre Jr., as he won last year's New Japan Cup, although it was not this many competitors. It was 16, but Zack Sabre won that last year. And then, of course, Naito, who's wanting to be the first person to hold belts in, hold the ICE, the Intercontinental and the New Japan Heavyweight Championship at the same time. So, of course, he has to be seen as a favorite as he looks to make that goal happen. To me, those seem to be the standout favorites. And then, of course, you know, Tanahashi and Okada, you're never going to count them out. But story-wise, those seem to be the two that are going to be watched more closely in this thing.
And this card almost is too stacked. It's hard to look at it. And like you said, some of these first-round matches could be finals. And you're going to watch people go at it and know that once they lose, they don't go on to, you know, move on in this tournament. So it's going to be interesting. I'm looking forward to seeing Colt Cabana. I know Colt is a funny guy, most by reputation, but he is and can be a serious wrestler. And I think that it'll be interesting to watch to see what his strategy is with Maccabi. He's not particularly known for strong style Colt Cabana, but he may get in there and surprise the hell out of all of us. You know, he may not die immediately. That could be a thing. Yano and Davey Boy Smith should be a really interesting matchup, but yeah, I'm keeping eyes on Zack Sabre Jr. I'm keeping eyes on Naito. One of those two, I feel, could possibly just go right ahead, like you said, and win this whole thing. People who want to get in their way and stop them, but this field of competitors, both old and new, both need to watch out for those two guys.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to some of these matches. Osprey, Fillet, kind of interesting to see Nichols and what he does. Tanahashi, Umino, Ibushi, Naito is the one that I think I'm most excited about. They had a great showing at the G1 Climax. Kojima, Suzuki, though, that should also be really fun to watch. So a lot of really fun matches, exciting possibilities in the second round, the quarterfinals. Finals being March 24th. The winner, as Danny mentioned, will go on to get a title shot against Switchblade at the G1 Supercard in Madison Square Garden. But it'll be interesting to see. So all this action will be on New Japan World, where you can get that for 9.99 yen. Unless you're a brand new subscriber, then you still have to pay 9.99 yen, because the Japanese don't give discounts. And so with that is the show for tonight. I hope you enjoyed it. Please be sure to check out prior episodes. We are anywhere you can hear podcasts. We are on iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean, TuneIn. So please, on Google Play, please go ahead and subscribe. Give us a review on the iTunes. And also make sure you check us out on the Twitter machine at FOW Radio. Danny's on Twitter at DannyFNDanger. Mika's on Twitter at Mika Villas. I'm on Twitter at YellowmanPA. Once again, thanks for listening. And as always, keep watching wrestling.